This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Top Shelf Sports Talk. You're hanging out in the sports bar with Danger and Battaglia on the Sports Leader, 95.7 FM and AM 950, The Fan, Rochester.
He's blogging the boys. Dallas Cowboys start their off-season work today. We'll get to that with RJ Ochoa, who's covering the Cowboys at SB Nation. But RJ, you enjoyed the Masters as much as anybody yesterday. What an unbelievable final round. What a roller coaster ride for Rory McIlroy. Welcome back into the sports bar, buddy.
Of course. Thanks for having me, guys. It's always good to be on the best show in America. Yesterday was perfect in every single way. As a guy in his mid-30s, I've been waiting for yesterday for pretty much all of my adult life.
Really? Can you expand on that? Are you just a Rory fan, or just how, as compared to other Masters, RJ?
Yeah, I mean, I love Rory, and I think that, I cover the Dallas Cowboys, so I have a kind of innate bit of narcissism within me, just to, you have to have the job, you know what I mean? But I don't mean to speak on behalf of an entire subset that is, millennial men, I suppose, but to stereotype. But I would say for the most part, we root for Rory. He's our age. You know, he falls into this demographic. And so I actually wrote yesterday, at least why I was rooting for him. I have a wife and son. I know I've talked to you guys about this before. And I've experienced so much of life. Rory is this kind of undercurrent, this common denominator. And he's been so vulnerable at times. And he's been chasing this that entire time. And so in the most, cliche way that sports has the power to make real for us, Rory is proof that, I can win my own version of the Masters and that I can fall in the Open or the U.S. Open the same way he did and ultimately still persevere. So I know that's sappy and lame on a lot of levels, but damn, it was tough to watch and tough to hold back tears.
Well, I tell you, it's interesting because I think both Gino and I grew up in the age of Tiger, and when we saw Tiger do what Tiger did, like, there's nothing that we believe can compare to that. But you're viewing this through the lens of maybe just a slightly younger generation, and you're saying that Rory is kind of like the guy of your generation. I was saying it earlier, like, I don't know that anybody can be Tiger, just like I don't know that anybody could be Jack, but Rory certainly feels now with the career Grand Slam and knowing that he's one of six that he can be, viewed as among the elite. And maybe you're right. Maybe like the Tiger of the millennial generation.
Yeah, no one is Tiger. And I think any generation acknowledges that. And what he did, 6 years ago, even still stands alone. But I would say that it felt like we were really lucky to get that. I mean, it felt like, wow, this was so precious that Tiger was able to give us one more. And I think there was this universal level of understanding, like, this is never going to happen again. Whereas with Rory, I mean, this really did feel like a coronation of sorts. This is like if Game of Thrones had ended properly, right? Like we've been waiting for this for forever. And so for it to happen and for it to happen in this like tumultuous, roller coastery sort of way, it was, I don't know. I mean, like, I've never seen the Cowboys win the Super Bowl in terms of my adult life. So I don't know. I'm an Astros fan, as you guys know. That comes really close for me in terms of things. And I love other golfers more than Rory in certain respects. But watching, a level of history like that in any sport is really cool to live through.
Yeah. And RJ, last one for me on the golf, because it is kind of just this celebration of this club, of this format. And as far as a TV product, RJ, there's nothing else that compares to it, because heck, we're guilty of this too. Like, so many commercial messages, you're bombarded throughout the day, and it's so limited. I don't know if we're ever going to get anything else like that. I just hope that they never change the formula here at Augusta National.
Yeah, you know, people say all the time about how it's so cool how the patrons obviously don't have their phones, and so they're kind of experiencing it from an eye-to-eye standpoint. But to your point, because there are so limited commercial interruptions, you know, I didn't check my phone that much yesterday. I don't know how y'all were, but especially given the way that the round was kind of happening. Now, golf offers natural rhythms and pockets for you to do that, but it is so special and so unique. A hot take, and maybe this is a conversation for a different day. I've been once, and I would offer that yesterday was the kind of day that I would hate to be there for. And that is the take, because it's amazing. Like, don't get me wrong, but there are thousands upon thousands of people, and because you don't have your phone, because there are throngs of human beings, you simply cannot watch all of the golf, right? I mean, you know, yesterday featured, I mean, how many different highs and lows and moments of extreme consequence and pitfalls. And if you had been there, you would have seen a small fraction of them. And so I happened to be there when Patrick Reed won, which, you know, if you go, you want a loser to win, you know, kind of like my year, because, you know, you don't want to have missed something amazing.
Well, that's funny. It does feel like it. I mean, like most sports, it's a made-for-TV product, from the spray painting of the grass to green to the quartz in the bunkers. But to be there live, I have to imagine RJ was quite the thrill, even though you had to watch Patrick Reed put on the green jacket for the first time. We're joined by RJ Ochoa, blogging the boys at SB Nation. Now, today is the day that the Cowboys report for their off-season work. Day one, new head coach. And I think it's worthy of note that Micah Parsons is participating, even though he doesn't have that extension. What can you tell us about day one here?
Yeah, I think the most important word relative to today is that it's voluntary. And you're right, Micah didn't have to show up, and he did. And this was the first, I would say, point of demarcation in that discussion. Now, look, it remains stupid that we're at this point and that Micah doesn't have his extension already. But to stick with the, you know, opening subject we discussed, that is par for the course for how the Cowboys operate, as you all well know. So this is, I mean, I don't know that I'm, you know, look, Rory McIlroy just won the Masters, so anything can happen in sports as far as I'm concerned. But I would not read into this as, you know, okay, the Micah extension is inevitable any moment now. I always thought that they were going to come to some point where they wanted to see Micah, even though it's stupid that he would have to prove anything else to them at this point in time. I think they wanted to see him show up when he didn't have to, because they've been through the ringer with different players on different levels and different situations like this. It's worth mentioning, obviously, that CeeDee Lamb didn't show up last year. It's also worth mentioning that Dak Prescott did. Now, all due respect to CeeDee, I think that Micah wields a different level of power just because he's the best player on the team. And we haven't seen somebody really do it, you know, the way CeeDee did. It doesn't happen as often as you would think relative to the Cowboys. So that Micah showed up is an olive branch on his part. And the Cowboys like to wait before they hand anything out on theirs.
RJ, I remember the last time we spoke, we had you on the show. You were in New Orleans. It was Super Bowl week. And one of the storylines that had nothing to do with the Chiefs or the Eagles was, hey, there's Myles Garrett on Radio Row, and he's rubbing shoulders. And we're all salivating here, as many other fans. In the end, he got paid. And he got paid from his own team, where we all thought he was going to be on the move. So my question here is, this story ends with Micah Parsons getting paid by the Cowboys, correct? Is there any other outcome other than, you know, the Cowboys doing this? They're not going to think about trading him, correct?
No, absolutely not. I would add to your sort of premonition, I guess, and say that this ends with Micah getting paid by the Cowboys and becoming the highest paid non-quarterback in the NFL, which is a distinction that this offseason we've seen Myles Garrett and Max Crosby each hold. Both players who obviously play the same position as Micah, which again is, you know, should have served as motivation to get this thing done as soon as possible so you could beat that market rate. It's why the Cowboys should have gotten this done a year ago. This, for anyone in your audience who's unaware, this is the second offseason in which Micah has been eligible for a contract extension. There's no reason why it shouldn't have been done a year ago, except for the fact that the Cowboys were dealing with the procrastinated situations involving Dak and CeeDee that we already talked about. And so this will absolutely end with Micah having won. There will be no way in the contract in which anyone can spin and say, well, the Cowboys got this, or they got that. No, this will end with Micah like Dak, like CeeDee, like DeMarcus Lawrence, having the gun. The Cowboys are the perpetual rabbit, but unlike your favorite rap song or whatever, they never get to hold the gun here.
RJ, talk about Dak, because there are reports out there that that hamstring isn't healing as quickly as I think some expected it to heal. What do we know about the health of the starting quarterback?
Yeah, I would say Dak now, I think my context is important in that Dak is now at the top of whatever you want to call the list that Rory McIlroy was at the top of for me, like relative to the Masters. Like I so badly want all of this for him in the way that I did for Rory. And because of that, I have some reservations and some concerns in a mild level, but in a real one, which is, I think, where you have to kind of come to terms with things, because I'm not panicked by that situation relative to the hamstring injury, but I don't, you know, Dak obviously spoke last week and he was asked whether he considers himself to be injury prone. And he said no. And I certainly don't fault him for that disposition. I think, though, if we were in a court of law, I would disagree. I mean, because if we trace back prior to 2020, Dak had missed a single moment of his career, but he had the ankle injury in 2020. In 2021, if you recall, when they were on Hard Knocks, he had that shoulder issue that was kind of plaguing him at the beginning of the season. He wound up missing a single game that year, kind of in late October, November time. In 2022, he hurt his thumb at the beginning of the season. He missed five games. He played every game in 23, should have won MVP, whatever. Last year, obviously, the hamstring. So it's not like we're talking about an athlete that has, you know, it's the same ankle or something that just keeps flaring up. It's these, and maybe they aren't just random fluke freak coincidences that are just happening over and over again. But I think it's fair to have some wonder. I mean, this is his 10th year in the NFL. I mean, these things take a toll. And so I'm a little concerned in a real objective way. But again, I ultimately trust him because I think that it's very difficult for Dak to be evaluated fairly on a national level by geniuses like yourselves. But thankfully, you guys are among the elite analysts in the game. That being said, we're talking about a dude who played out of his mind 2 years ago. And so I'm still willing to give him the benefit of the doubt and trust him in an overall perspective.
RJ, 10 days from today, it's the NFL draft. And one of the things I loved about the draft, we don't know anything. We think we know, but we really don't. And I'm looking at Shedeur Sanders. If he went number two to Cleveland, wouldn't surprise me. If he fell to number 12, it wouldn't surprise me. And I guess when we're exploring all the options of what the Cowboys may do with that first-round selection, would Jerry pull the trigger on something like that if Sanders is there at number 12?
You know, I really don't think so. And given that we already survived the Johnny Football, you know, being on the board, I know that was over a decade ago now, but I mean, that was, you know, that was flying as close to the sun as you possibly can on this situation. But maybe, you know, that was the Tony Romo era. Maybe Shedeur is Dak Prescott's, you know, Johnny Manziel, and he has to kind of go through that in the same respect. I find that incredibly, again, even if you think Dak sucks or you're somebody like that, I mean, he's just beginning the first year of the extension that they negotiated last year. And so from a pragmatic standpoint, you wouldn't be able to benefit from the rookie quarterback contract that you would have under Shedeur. So it just, again, doesn't make sense on a practical level. In terms of what is most likely married with, I think, the general hopes of Cowboys fans, I think everybody wants a skill position player there. CeeDee Lamb is remarkable, but I think Bills fans are kind of in a similar boat here in terms of wanting more options and more weapons for, in your case, the reigning MVP to work with. And so Tent McMillan out of Arizona, I think, is the best possible option, arguably the best wide receiver that isn't Travis Hunter, obviously. And I say that as an Arizona State Sun Devil, which is difficult for me given that he went to the worst school in America. But Tent McMillan and Matthew Golden out of Texas, I think those are really great options for the Cowboys. And that's the lone position of need they had when the offseason began that they haven't addressed in a serious way from a quantitative perspective. We've seen them add linebackers and running backs and defensive tackles. But wide receiver, while they did sign Paris Campbell, they still could use a huge infusion of juice, especially since Brandon Cooks left back to New Orleans.
RJ, dating back to 2020, the team that has spent the least amount of draft capital on the running back position is the Dallas Cowboys. And I know you get Javonte Williams coming in out of Denver, but he wasn't very good behind a better offensive line in terms of run blocking in Denver than what the Cowboys were last year. does Ashton Gentry, if he falls to Dallas at 12, does a running back in a first round where the over-under is set at 2.5 for running back selected, do the Cowboys go running back early in this draft?
You know, when the draft cycle began right after the other worst team in America won the Super Bowl, I think everybody, you know, naturally connected Ashton to the Cowboys. I mean, any mock draft you saw, whatever outlet, that was super popular. But as we've moved along and gotten closer to it, I think we've all just kind of understood and accepted that the reality is Ashton's probably not going to be there. And he'll probably have been off the board for, I would say, at least an hour by that point in time. And so the most likely available option is Omarion Hampton out of North Carolina. And that just feels like such a reach for the Cowboys. But to your point, while they did sign Javonte Williams, they also added Miles Sanders. This is a team that, you know, they went from being on one end of the spectrum with spending the fourth overall pick and doubling down with a $90 million contract extension at the position to not caring about it at all. And, you know, the reality of you know, proper utilization of resources is very much in the middle of that spectrum. And so we've offered for years. I mean, the fourth round last year was kind of that money round where everybody knew that the run was going to happen on the position, that yet the Cowboys didn't have a fourth-round selection because of the Trey Lance trade. And so it does feel like, you know, the second or third round, that day two kind of run of players at running back specifically, is where it's going to make the most sense for them to find one. The Buckeyes both make a lot of sense, whether it's Trevion Henderson or Quinshon Judkins. I mentioned I'm an ASU guy. Cam Scadaboo would be a little bit further down the line, but I would love that option as well. I absolutely expect them to add there, but I don't think Ashton will fall to them. But I do, to your question's point, I guess, think if he did, they would have a very difficult time saying no.
RJ Ochoa, Blogging the Boys, our guest here in the sports bar. RJ, since the last time we spoke, we actually had a trade between the Cowboys and Bills, and I know a lot of Bills fans are kind of snickering at this because the idea that Kyrie Elam was even going to be on the roster next year, but the Cowboys will get him in early here. And your early thoughts here on this trade here and how maybe Elam's chances of actually making the Cowboys roster, how would you size him up?
I promise this is not a flex, and it's just to give you the context. That trade happened when I was en route to playing Pebble Beach, and so I was on a natural high. And so, you know, that I may have graded it on a curve is my point. I loved the trade. Now, I know that, you know, Bills fans were kind of fed up and whatnot, and I get that perspective completely. And I'm not, you know, sitting here saying, like, what a bunch of idiots. The Cowboys pulled the old rope-a-dope. But the Cowboys – You have to understand that the bar is so low for this team in terms of expectations of activity, especially, you know, measured against what they did last year, which was a whole batch of nothing. And so if you recall, a couple of years ago, the Cowboys, you know, made some veteran trades for Stephon Gilmore and Brandon Cooks, who I already mentioned. Now this is not that. I'm in no way offering that. But this was one of what we now know to be three eventual veteran trades the Cowboys pulled off. They obviously traded for Elam, but they also spent, you know, time working with Tennessee to get Kenneth Murray, and most recently the Patriots for Joe Milton. And so these are the kinds of moves that we have begged the Cowboys to, you know, explore. These, you know, and these, you know, Kenneth Murray also, like Elam, a former first-round pick. I know these are things that are in the rearview mirror now, but that makes sense. And if all you're doing is turning, you know, a lottery ticket into a slightly longer shot lottery ticket relative to your day three pick, I'm fine with that. I'm very good with that. So I really did applaud the Cowboys for the move. I don't know that I found it to be cunning or, you know, super brilliant or you know, of higher intellect than what the Bills are doing, but it made sense to me in terms of addressing a position of need, especially because Jordan Lewis left in a free agency to the Jaguars. And you never know, maybe a change of scenery does work out for him. We have seen that happen for the Cowboys in years past. Somebody like Dante Fowler, you know, everybody laughed at, or Alden Smith, like these former first-round picks who didn't really, you know, kind of shine in their first NFL stints, but they get there with the Cowboys and they trust their veteran scouting department, and you never know what you're able to get out of them. And so I really, really liked it, but again, I also understand being happy that he's gone from your roster.
Hey, look, I mean, at worst, he's a great guy. Never heard a bad thing about Kyrie Elam while he was with the Buffalo Bills, other than he couldn't get on the field and maybe wasn't necessarily a fit for what Sean McDermott has in mind for his defense, which, you're right, that change of scenery could be anything. We're talking to RJ Ochoa, Blogging the Boys at SB Nation. The kind words, the flattery, RJ. I mean, we can't let you go without letting you have the floor for a little bit here and tell us more about the work you're doing there for SB Nation.
Oh, I appreciate it. You know, it's we're getting out of a, you know, there are a handful of doldrums, I would say, in the off season, which is what, you know, allows a schmuck like me an opportunity to go play Pebble Beach, you know, you get that time off or whatever. But we're ramping up, obviously, for the NFL draft. And I've been scratching my golf itch a little bit, writing a little bit more for just SBNation.com in general. But this is, I wouldn't say it's the most fun time to be covering the Cowboys. Obviously, things have been really tense and really chaotic for a few years now. But I do think that the darkest part of the night is behind us. I think that's what last year was. And I think that that sentiment is really starting to be adopted among the fan base. And so, you know, you mentioned it. The draft is 10 days away, and that is, you know, Kate McAllister incorrectly said in Home Alone that Christmas was the season of perpetual hope. That's wrong, Kate. It's NFL draft time. And so we're very excited to look at what the Cowboys are going to do with these 10 picks. And so we're just previewing things galore, mocking drafts every single day, and just kind of crossing our fingers and hoping that Jerry Jones doesn't say something stupid, which is something that, you know, we have to hope for harder than you think.
RJ, A-plus performance as always from you. Really appreciate your time today. Be well.
Thanks a lot, guys. Have a great day.
You got it. There's RJ Ochoa blogging the boys for SB Nation, talking some Dallas Cowboys, talking some Masters. I didn't think about that, but that makes a lot of sense that, you know, if you're RJ's age, you're a guy in your mid-30s, you're a millennial, Rory's really the guy that you've kind of come up with, right? Like, you saw Tiger, you recognize the greatness, but it's been Rory that's the guy that you identify with the most because you've seen his growth, his kind of rise to fame, and his struggle as well.
Well, the one thing they did show, and you've seen it, when Rory won his first two majors, like, oh my
gosh.
He's a kid.
Yeah. An absolute kid. We were laughing. We're like, look at him. He looks like a dork. He's just a goofy-looking kid from Northern Ireland. And, you know, like most of us, he finds a girl from Rochester, and she cleans him up, takes the crusties out of his eyes. And next thing you know, he's got a green jacket on. Who knew? Over-under for first-round running back set at 2.5, Gino. Which direction are you going?
Under.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a draft that is loaded with running backs, apparently. So, unless you want the brand name, okay, you're going to have the two guys.
Well, I think that's why they said at 2.5, right? Like, there could be two guys. Will there be three?
But why would you do that at the end of the first round?
Who was the last guy? The Chiefs took Clyde Edwards-Helaire with the final pick of the first round.
See, that's going to be an interesting, like, when was the last time we actually had three running backs go in the first round?
Yeah.
Somebody might say, well, just last year. I honestly don't know. I'll have to.
I think it's been a minute. I think it's been a while since we've had that. But that'll be interesting. And I wonder what happens with Ashton Jeanty. Do teams actually recognize him as somebody that can be that difference maker offensively, invest something as much as a top 10 pick in him? Or does the rest of the league kind of view him as, okay, well, that's a running back and we can get that production in the later round?
2024 draft. How many running backs won the first round? Zero.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Appreciate RJ giving us his time, giving us a little peek behind the curtain there, what's going on with Dallas, who gets their offseason work today, as do the New Orleans Saints. The Saints. What to do if you're the New Orleans Saints and you might not have your quarterback? The soft tank is happening, Gino. I'm convinced now.
Let's do it.
I'm convinced that the Saints are in.
No, but they are the soft tank. They are the perpetual team. They're like, okay, let's put some flex tape on it and we'll be good.
I don't think that's happening this year. I think no amount of flex tape is going to make that team a contender or you know, for their division. Or I think they're contending for nothing but the first overall pick in 2026.
I have the answer, Danger.
Tell me.
Okay, last time we had more than two running backs go in the first round, the year was 2018.
Okay.
I'm not going to tell you. You think about that.
All right. We'll get those three running backs figured out here from the 2018 draft during Happy Hour, which is on the way next on the Fan Rochester. We'll recap what was an amazing, amazing Masters tournament and a finish on Sunday that I don't think we'll be forgetting anytime soon. And we'd love to get your take on it as well at 866-4326. 585-866-4FAN.
You're listening to The Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia on 95.7 FM and AM 950, The Fan Rochester.